I'm an addict named Michael.
Hey, Michael.
And as always, I thank Almighty God for allowing me an opportunity to just to be here, man. And, you know, be asked to carry a message of hope and the process of recovery and be an example. I'm tired as hell. We drove 10 hours, you know what I'm saying, to be here, me and my sponsor. We talked about a whole variety of things, you know, about our lives and about, you know, what we do in this process. You know, feeling real good about my, you know, ability to carry the message and shit, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I got down here, you know, got nuzzled in, came in big chested, you know how we do this shit, and swaggered a little, went into the first meeting, and them motherfuckers came with the A, and they carried the message for real. And I walked out, you know, feeling a little less than, feeling that maybe I might not be equipped to, you know, do this thing, you know what I'm saying? And in the process of dealing with that, I dealt with, you know, the issue of what I deal with on a daily basis. See, I'm a product of the literature, like Dennis, and I know what I deal with on a daily basis. I accepted that fact some years ago, that when I'm in my disease, I'm dealing with a destructive, violent power greater than myself that can lead to relapse. And every time I get in it, you know what I mean, I have to identify its purpose in my life. And it is always to separate me away from the something that happens in this room. And so I had to go back and go through my shit, you know, like I do, like yes, I can, like yes, I can, fuck it, yes, I will. And so I'm coming in here with the yes, I will attitude. To carry this message about social acceptability doesn't equal recovery. I always ask the God of my understanding to allow me to share my story more accurately this time than I did the last time. Because our literature reminds me that everything you know is subject to revision, especially what you know about the truth. So every time I expose myself to my truths, I declare that this time, you know, God allow me to be a little bit more accurate. I also share this topic because the newcomer is the most important person in any meeting. Like, it don't make a difference if it's the 1 o'clock meeting, the 3:30 meeting, the 15:30 meeting. It don't make a fucking difference. Like, if it's the new cat out there, just one. Like, he the most important person. And, like, I always share that because it was when I was in ICU, you know, the front row. Because I came in, when I came in first, I fucked the back. Like, I came, like, straight to the front. Like, you know, if I could have, like, had a siren on my fucking head, it would have been going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, I hauled ass up to the front because I needed some front row attention.
That's right.
All right? So I always share from the perspective that, because I was looking for just one motherfucker to help me. Like, I just needed one somebody. Didn't give a fuck who he was, whether he was the boy, girl, it didn't fucking make a difference. See, because I came in here, and when I came in the door, like, we're talking about social acceptability don't equal recovery, so I need to, you know, talk about before social acceptability. I need to be talk about, like at the end of the road type shit. I need to talk about, like, when I came in here and sat on the front row, and, like, I just looked for one motherfucker to help me. To the world, you might be one person. But to one person, you might be the world. And I stood up and I saw that one person. And I remember what he looked like, man. He was like a big fat dude, man. And like they called him Money. Like he had a lot of gold and shit on and fucking diamonds all on his feet. Like I'm sitting in ICU looking like a bucket of Yakum. That's like a whole lot of different shit. And like I didn't know nothing he was saying. Like, I didn't know none of the slick slogans. I didn't, like, know, you know, nothing. Like, if you don't pick, I ain't know none of that shit. All I knew is that, like, I came in here, and, like, all I wanted to do was stop smoking crack. For real. Like, I don't even know if I got tired of smoking crack. I just got tired of cutting open the goddamn can. I got tired of back. Didn't want no more of that. So when I came in here, I didn't know nothing about that. And when I started working the steps, I found it in the 12th step. In the 12th step, I found what I was looking for in the literature. And it says we might often say that we're grateful to have this program. Gives us a way to cope with life on life terms, and after we've been clean for a while, we realize the principles of Narcotics Anonymous are totally universal. They could probably change the world if everybody practiced them. Yeah. We may start to wonder why we don't open up the doors to NA to all those who have any kind of problem. But as I've learned from my predecessors, having a single purpose is probably one of the most effective ways of ensuring that the opportunity will remain for an addict to receive the identification he or she needs. If NA tried to be all things to all people, there's an addict who might walk through that door only wanting to know how to stop using drugs and not be able to find anybody who knew. I'm glad y'all was here when I walked through. Because I didn't give a shit about no social acceptability. I didn't give a damn about no podium. I didn't give a damn about none of that shit. I just wanted to put the pipe down.
That's all right. Talk about it.
I wanted to stop selling my baby shit.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn how to be an effective son. A good brother. I wanted to learn how to do those things. And in the seventh step, it talked about we gradually and carefully pull ourselves out of the isolation and loneliness of addiction. And into the mainstream of life, we're talking about social acceptability. And what y'all told me to do was real simple if I followed it. Like, get your ass up and go to a fucking meeting. Like, I hear them newer members today talking, you know, giving us excuses and shit, talking about, you know, like I ain't had no ride. Like, I didn't give a fuck about no ride. Y'all told me the meeting started at 5 o'clock, 3 o'clock, I was walking. Fast as hell. All I wanted to do was get there because, see, something amazing happened when I went to my very first few meetings. There was addicts in there who had used dope like I used dope. Those addicts knew the places that I had been. The literature says not just the geographical locations, but the hangouts of horror and despair that my spirit visited every time I used.
Wow.
Those addicts knew about those places as well as I did because they'd been there themselves. I started to feel appreciated in here, man. We're talking about social acceptability. And my sponsor told me from the gate, get a fucking job. We're talking about being responsible. Like, I was struggling early with my daughters. I got daughters. God bless me with two girls. I got a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. Like, I got custody of them. Like, I got to learn how to be a dad. We talking about social acceptability now. Like, I got to learn how to, like, do the fucking diapers. I got girls, man. I sent my daughter to church, man. She there with me on the side. I done her hair the best I could. The lady right next to me looking at me, sucking her fucking teeth.
Why you bring them girls in here like that?
I said, ma'am, I did it myself. She said, bless your heart. So that taught me I had to practice that shit. So I practiced. Like, I practiced, like, trying to cornrow with these big-ass fucking hands on the little girl. I got the waffle iron and tried to waffle the fucking hand, like, burnt myself all up and shit. I did that shit. But y'all just told me to keep practicing. if I just keep practicing something, like I'm gonna be all right with something, and all of a sudden, damn it, I became a fucking beautician up in this motherfucker. Like, you can't tell me my girls, hey, this shit is, man, I'm French braiding and all kind of shit. Like, I can multicolor some barrettes like a motherfucker. Right now. We're talking about being socially responsible and social acceptability. Like, all I wanted to do was, like, to belong to something. Like, I have become the drudge of fucking society. Like, my people didn't want to be my people no more. Like, I didn't have, like, no friends. Everybody I knew was associated with using in one form, like, or another. Every thought I had was sitting around using, like, in one form or another, if I had a job. That job was sitting around using, like, in one form or another. Fuck everything else. Like, all I wanted to do was use. Damn the baby. We talk about the direct nature of this thing. Once I took a hit, I ain't had no more motherfucking children.
That's right.
What children? Where they at?
Yeah. That's right.
But there was something about the pull of a father's love to when I looked at my daughter's man and I said, they know what the fuck I'm doing. But they couldn't really. Hell, they was months old. My 9-year-old was months old, Lex, when I first came around. I was pushing in that goddamn diaper. I got the fucking pamper, one leg all fucked up. The other one ain't even on yet. Piss running down the leg. But I'm trying. And it was y'all who told me, no, baby, you got the pamper on backwards. No, this is how you do it. And I'm looking like I be goddamn. I didn't know that thing went like that. But y'all taught me how to do some things. And like what my sponsors taught me was how to motherfucking be reintroduced into society. Like I started to have some aspirations, like in some dreams, I wanted to like do some shit. And all of a sudden, like days turned into like months, and months like turned into like years, and like I remember my first year, like, oh shit, I'm getting ready to get this motherfucker. Like in my area, like they put balloons and shit out. Like the whole year, all I wanted was them balloons. Because I wanted to be recognized for something. And in my area, like, we set you off aside. That's the only time in this fellowship that we set you off by your motherfucking self. Like, to recognize you for the work done. God damn it, I wanted to be recognized. We're talking about social acceptability now. I wanted to be recognized. I wanted the fucking balloons. But like my belief system wasn't there yet, because like on that day that I got ready to celebrate and I knew that the balloons were like a part of what we did, I didn't trust that. I'm at the motherfucking store buying my own balloons. Like I call my sponsor and see, my sponsor say, where you at, Mike? I said, I'm at the Eckerd's. I got a whole pile of balloons. She said, oh, put the balloons back, baby. Put the balloons back, baby. Have some faith. So I started to have faith in this process because I had like 27 balloons. I mean, they was blowed up and everything at the CVS grocery. And I'm looking at the people, they're looking at me. I'm talking about what my sponsor said, put the balloons back. Motherfucking lady looked at me and said, and your bill is... But what I did was I paid for those balloons, man, and I trusted and believed, like in the more experienced member, the literature talks about, like you'll be amazed at the simplicity of the responses of the more experienced member. See, and I had a more experienced member tell me, put those motherfucking balloons back. Where's your belief system at? What you truly believe in? Like, do you believe it's by chance your ass made it up in this motherfucker? No, that's right. So I put the balloons back, and I went to my home group. And I'd be damned if every balloon I put back there wasn't that same balloon at my home group waiting on my ass. It was the exact same number. See, that way the God of my understanding will take away any bona fide credit that man might be able to say, well, I did that. God will say, if you got 28 down there, damn it, I got 28 for your ass. And I counted each one of them. We're talking about social acceptability. Social acceptability. Like I became all right, like all of a sudden walking out, like into the neighborhood where those ladies, I'm from the South. I don't know if y'all know about the South, but I'm like from the deep South, like Columbia, South Carolina, where like the old ladies who are like cornerstones of communities, like they still sit on porches and like dip snuff and with their legs and they dress as long as a motherfucker and like they point their crooked finger at your ass and like you might be fucked up for a week or two. Like they'll go from like saying like baby God gonna be with you, baby God gonna be with you, to like God damn, I wish he'd get away from here. He's a drudge in our society. Well, see, it was those people like that I wanted to not impress, but like I wanted them to accept me, man. But like this disease had me like so rocked out on my mind, I'm like walking back and forth like I didn't even see them over there. See, like, oh shit, they're gonna miss Sarah Bonner. No. Oh, hey, Miss Sarah Bonner. Oh man, fuck Miss Sarah Bonner. Yeah. I came up in here, man, and my belief system got altered. Something happened to me, man, as a result of working steps and coming to meetings and making myself available. Something happened, man, and not only did that something happen to my spirit, we're talking about the initial contact with social acceptability. Something happened, man. And I don't know, like, what the fuck it was. I don't know, like, how long it took. Like, I don't know, you know, when it started. But, like, one day it started. Like, one day my approach, man, to recovery changed. And all of a sudden, like I had been on my job for a little while. Like they had started, like, asking me for shit. Like, on my jobs. Like they were like, well, what do you think? And I'm looking like, who the fuck they talking to? Like, what do you think? You asking me what the fuck I think? See, like, it had been a long time since anybody asked me, like, what I think. And, like, it had been a long time since, like, somebody in a tie was, like, taking interest in me and, like, saying, Mike, we're really interested in what you have to say. Because I talk about, like, at the end, like, when I could no longer function as a human being, I had a difficult time talking. Like, our literature says strange habits and mannerisms. I didn't know how to speak no more. Like, I used to go across to the dope hole and tell the motherfucker, just, get it, motherfucker. I want to kill the motherfucker, man. Social acceptability. And all of a sudden, after doing the work in here, all of a sudden, after sponsorship, all of a sudden, after being connected to a home group, all of a sudden, after walking out and being able to go or willing to go to H&I commitments, like when others said they'll go, but fuck it, they didn't show up. And all of a sudden, like when the calls came to like go share in a place like 900 fucking miles away, like at an ungodly hour, like you didn't say, well, damn, I wish I'd have got another hour. You just said, fuck it, I'll be there. Like having the chairperson call you because they know like you're driving a long way away and like you know, are you going to show up? Like Boo and Archery, like we don't have no other choice but to show up. And we show up. Like I got to be real careful like of ego inflating circumstances and situations in society, like because like they can get so big to me, like all of a sudden like money, property, and prestige like will start like taking hold of my ass. And like I've been in those situations and I've been able to combat those situations with like my connections in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, we call it a sponsor who's like not afraid of my motherfucking ass. To tell me like off the rap, like motherfucker, shut the fuck up. Like I'm all right with shut the fuck up sometimes, you know, because sometimes that's what I need to feel and hear and see just to be all right with me. Like I'm an addict who came in this motherfucker after living in a storage room with no door, like me and a possum. Like, I don't know what, if you know what a possum is, but like a possum is like a nasty, he's just a vicious, nah, god damn, he's horrible. He's a stank motherfucker. Like he was just like me. And I remember coming in some days looking at that fucking possum, and he'd look at me and say, ah, and I'd be scared as shit. And then, but there were days when I'd come in and look at the fucking possum and say, ah, motherfucker. And he'd be scared. But I found myself going way beyond that, man, way beyond anything I could ever hope or dream in Narcotics Anonymous. I came in here homeless and reckless, living up that thing with that fucking animal, and I know he's still there, but like I ain't there no more. Like God has transitioned me in the second step, like if you can have a sense of trust and in the process of recovering and a power greater than yourself, like God will transform you from superficial happiness to a fundamental transformation that's going to make your life more satisfying on a deeper level. Like I got a different kind of contact with the God of my understanding right now. Like right now, I'm a social worker.
All right.
Right now. Right now I'm on suicide watch. In the last 2 weeks I've been talking with my patients about suicide conditions. I had to go into a young lady's room who suffers from the disease of addiction, and like I have to wear a different hat because I'm a professional, but I still stand firm in the principles embodied in our steps and our traditions, and I have to like tightrope, man, making sure that I don't create no ethical, you know, situations dealing with this woman. I got to talk to her about like what was it? What is it? Like, and I know because I sat on the porch with the pistol in my mouth. I sat on the porch, pulled the hammer back and wondered, like, if I blowed my fucking head off, who'd cry? I don't want to live like this no more, God. Do something now. I don't need a tomorrow blessing. I need a now blessing, and I got a now blessing. In Narcotics Anonymous, I got a now blessing. God bless me. Now I get an opportunity, man, and I got to be real careful because social acceptability don't equal recovery. See, recovery is the active change in my ideas and attitudes, and all I got to rely on that is the evidence. I look at the evidence of the work that I put in. I just talked to my princess just now because I wanted to hear her voice. She said, Daddy, I love you, Daddy. I said, Daddy, love you too, boo. She said, do you love? Daddy loves you. You are so special. And now she going to sleep tonight like she feeling a whole lot better. And I'm feeling great. Social acceptability don't equal recovery. Recovery takes work. It takes a lot of work to come up in this camp. We misinform the newcomer when we come to it's simple. Bullshit! Ain't nothing simple about staying clean and getting clean. Ain't nothing simple about the transformation that takes place in the second step. There ain't shit simple about making a decision in the third. Nothing simple about sitting down and exposing yourself to all the shit that you did or thought about doing.
That's right.
Nothing simple about that. And I had to be real careful. Right now, I got to be real careful about ego inflating situations, man, because I'm in a position now where I could be transformed or morphed back into the fanatic, the addict, the dope fiend, person capable of great wickedness and maliciousness. I can be that person again if I'm not careful. Social acceptability, I don't give a fuck about who I am or what I become in the professional world. It all begins with Narcotics Anonymous. It all ends with Narcotics Anonymous. One day, I'm going to lay down in the casket. And it's on that day that I'm going to ask somebody, lean over in my casket and say, Mike was a good motherfucker. Say what you will, but we're going to lay this figure eight in his casket because I don't ever want to use again. I don't ever not one more time want to use again. I want to continue to be the beacon of light for like that still sick and suffering addict, like who might walk in the door. I want to be the one to say, yes, you can. Because it was you who said, yes, you can. Even when I didn't believe that shit for real, you said it. Wow. Yes, you can. Yes, you can, Mike. And on May the 7th, when we go to my graduation, you get to meet my mommy. My mommy's coming, y'all. My mama don't leave Savannah, Georgia for shit. My mom's coming to my graduation on May the 7th. I'm graduating summa cum laude at school. In 4 years, I've made 2 B's in 4 years. I got a 3.98 GPA. I've been busting my ass and doing my work. And even in the work that I've been doing, I still make sure that I'm real, real centered on my recovery. Because without my recovery, nothing else goes for me. Nothing else. And if you're new, I want you to understand that if you're new, just keep coming. See, because it was on some days that all I had to do was just keep coming. I didn't know what was happening to me. I didn't know how I was feeling or how it was possible that today I didn't use no dope when before I could never get through a day not using. I ain't never stopped using until when I first picked up, God damn it, I was gone. I can't even remember a brief period where I even might have pretended to stop. I just couldn't. I couldn't stop. A pill at a time. A bottle at a time. A shot at a time. A sniff at a fucking time. I couldn't stop until I found Narcotics Anonymous. Thank God that those of us addicted today are more fortunate. Thank God that for the first time in the entire history of mankind, a simple way has been proven itself in the lives of many of us. It's available to you. It is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as, help me y'all,
Narcotics Anonymous.
Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah. All right. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Ms. Frances J. from Jacksonville, North Carolina.
No way. My name is Frances J. and I'm a recovering addict. I'd like to thank the committee for drafting me after whoever was supposed to show up didn't show up.
That's right. Go ahead.
But I believe that nothing's out of order. And the reason why I believe that is because they asked me to share on social acceptability does not equal recovery. Yeah. Now for a social butterfly like myself, yeah. Look, I equate that to popularity. And the reason why I equate it to popularity is because I'm a popular person. I was popular before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I always acted how you wanted me to act so that you will accept me enough to be a social butterfly. And I say a social butterfly because social butterflies take wings eventually. But when you don't know you're a social butterfly, you're a caterpillar. You're just crawling around the surface. Now, you know, like we do in here, I got this book mocked up now. But it took me 20 years to really get into this book and read it. For 20 years, and I got 24 years, my process of recovery just really took flight. After I got shot 20 with 4 times point back range in front of my kids by unknown assailant. It just really took flight because when the old me lay down, the new me got up. Yeah. Yeah. I was always trying to be accepted by y'all. Yeah. How y'all felt about me made me sociably acceptable to you. It was a kind of a thing, but first, before I go on, I got to do this. I'd like to thank my home group members from the Survivalist Group of North Carolina. I'm from Jacksonville today by way of D.C. But Joan is not going to let me not say that. And look, we got one meeting in Jacksonville, North Carolina. One. It meets 7 days a week. at 8 o'clock. And we don't have a whole bunch of meetings where I come from today. But when I was in D.C., we had a whole bunch of meetings. Even though, like, it's a lot of people there with double digits now. But let me tell you about social. Look, we thought that we was in a big social. I don't know about them. But I knew I was in a social club. I felt accepted when I came in Narcotics Anonymous. I love how they gave me hugs. When they gave me hugs, I felt like I was somebody. See, because what you never knew was I never felt like I was somebody in front of anybody. You could tell me I was pretty. I would never believe that because I was the one that couldn't look in the mirror and tell myself. But what we do is, like I did, I'll put on an ego and an image when I come out in public for you. But I'm the same one that when I was locked up in the penitentiary, I came out pimping, went in my cell crying. Because I had to act a certain kind of way in front of you. But when I got in the cell, I was like, God, if you can find it in your heart to get me up out of here. And I had more time than time allowed. I was facing 18 years in district court and 8 to 24 in superior court. Going this way. And I was young. So when I came in recovery, I was young. I didn't want to recover. I just wanted to stop using. I was 77 pounds at the end of my addiction. And my social behavior got me to using. I had a whole bunch of friends when I had crack. I had a whole bunch of friends when I had money. I had a whole bunch of friends when I didn't have any money. What I didn't know is that my personality and it was something inside of me that always drew you to me. But I couldn't figure it out. Had never figured it out for a long time. It's a thing, we say this is a spiritual program. When you're not in touch with your spirit, what you'll do is you'll act a certain kind of way until your spirit touches your spirit man, and y'all become one person. So what happened is, with 20 years clean, I believe, because I was so busy trying to become like this main entity in everybody's life. But see, like they say in the literature that, our problem started way before we got to Narcotics Anonymous. I tried to be accepted when I was a little kid. Every time I got candy and I walked to school, I gave candy out to everybody. Yeah. So that when these people see me coming, they be like, you got any candy? I be like, yeah, you want to play with me today? Yeah. All right, cool, here goes some candy. Yeah. And then the little boys that I say was touching me, I probably wanted them to touch me because it meant that they accepted me. But we carry that same behavior when we grow up. But we'll blame it on them when they don't accept us enough. When my father wasn't paying enough attention to me, or he was paying too much attention to me, by smacking my head off when I started smoking marijuana, I took an overdose to get more attention. Of pills. Then they sent me to a psychologist or psychiatrist, I don't even know what they call. But what it was, you know, they sit you down. You know, therapy. That's what y'all call it today. I don't know what I called it in the 12th grade. But I still was a social butterfly. I was who's who among all American cheerleader. I went to Catholic school. I could dance like nobody's business. I got go-go tattooed to my ankle. And every time I walked somewhere, they was like, go. I was like, I did that Miss America. What's up? I'm a holler. It always made me feel like I was somebody. I didn't dance to make you think I could dance. I danced so you could look at me dance. So I wanted to dance good so you could say, she could dance. And I'd be like, yeah, uh-huh. But see, what happens is, when I don't know who I am, I think I need that kind of environment to make me feel like I'm somebody. When I was somebody before I got to the environment. It took me a long time to understand that, look, I ain't got to scream and holler at you. I ain't got to speak in no certain dialect for you to hear me. If your spirit is open to hear the truth, then you're going to accept it and hear it. But for a long time, for my first 10 years, I killed everybody I called myself sponsoring because of my. They wanted to be with my clique. It was more like a clique. I wasn't teaching step work. How you going to teach step work or have somebody do step work or even live step work if you're not living it? You can't. I sold dope my 4th year. I sold dope my 10th year. I was facing 30 to life my 15th year because I never dressed nothing on paper. I wrote just enough to get by. And what it did was, because I was sociably acceptable to you, French, she, that's my girl. But when I walked away, a lot of them people that accepted me openly talked about me behind my back. So at my 20th year clean, at my 20th year anniversary, the attribute that I people like to call me was go-go. But see, that attribute was the same attribute that they talked about on the street, go-go. They talked about it when I was dancing. They talked about it when I stole their packages. Go-go got you, didn't she? She gone. And then I come in here, and because I don't know who I am, go-go would suffice. I'll be her for the moment. But she almost got me killed. Because I kept dipping and dabbing in two lifestyles. I'm over here. I'm over there. I'm trying to do NA or at least go to the meetings. Sure. Or at least go by the meetings. And every now and then I would say something. But nobody could look at my spirit and see that I was broken. I was a walking, living dead up in here. And we allow people to do that. Because we put our image and our ego on so much that I couldn't tell you who you are because you don't know. Yeah. But then you go get people to guide you that don't know who they are. But you say that's my sponsor. Yeah. How do I know? I had people that I had called sponsors. Man, I remember one time I called Jones. I called a whole bunch of people sponsors. But they were sponsors in name only. People can only help you when you allow them to help you. If you don't do no work, it's not their fault. It's their fault to a certain degree. But when you really want help, you ask for it. But the social part of this thing is, I'd rather be in a dance than in a meeting. But they all going on at the same time. Where your priorities at? What you really want out of this thing? Because they tell me in life, whatever I put in it is what I get out of it. If I don't put nothing in, I don't get nothing out. Look. It took me 20 years to surrender totally. 20 whole years. But what I understand now is that things don't happen to you, it happens for you. Because my social, facade, it came to an end. My high power said, enough. I'm tired of you being who they want you to be. I need you to be who I need you to be. So I can't make you grow up and go on in your life if you can't allow that old you to go. It gotta die. I die daily. Because there's something about me that keeps wanting to take me back to who I used to be. And I gotta remember who I've become or who I've transformed into. In this book right here, it says at the 12th step, page 122, the quintessential spirit that lies inside each one of us, the spark of life that was almost extinguished by our disease. My disease had a hit on me, and it tried to take me out on many different occasions. People talking about when I got shot clean. I got shot when I was using. I got 9 holes in me. But I'm still here. Because see, and me and the brother was talking about this, and he enlightened me. I never read that at all. Never read it. I say, okay, You showed me that. Now what? He said, the essence of something in its purest form. He said, your high power couldn't get to you until he could remove you so he could kill the old you to get you to the new you. So in essence, he's saying to me that, I say, well, I'm working on my purest form now. It's not important that I become who you want me to be ever, ever again. Because the person I become is not bad at all. Matter of fact, I like Francis more than I like Go-Go any day. I'm awesome. I'm all that and a bag of chips. For real. I was acting like I was all that back then. But I know I'm all that today. For the first time in my life, because I have given up the things that I thought meant the difference. It don't matter what I got on or whether you look at me a certain kind of way, because see, we put so many things on value. Our value system's messed up. But it's all right. Ain't nothing out of order. We gonna get there. It's not important what you wear on here. If a person can't look at you and see a beautiful person in you with whatever you got on. Because this don't make me. That's right. This has, it has nothing to do with who you are. If you can't get, I get up every morning, look in the mirror and say, hey, how you doing? Thank you, God. Woo. You ain't had bad, girl. I thank God for me today. Because I could have been on the front of somebody's t-shirt. I could have been an afterthought that y'all never, no longer thought about. But I was your girl when you was here. Don't give me flowers when I'm gone. Give me flowers while I'm here. I wouldn't care today if I had a million friends, because I just need a few good men, like they say in the service. I need a few good men. I need the people that's going to ride or die with me forever. And trust and believe I'm a ride or die with you the same way. The things that I thought meant the difference don't mean the difference at all. I thought money would make me sociably acceptable. My God has a way of showing me that those things really didn't matter at all. He put me in a place where I didn't have anything. I lost everything. I come from making $22 an hour. I was making teeth out my house. I had every kind of shoe you want. Every piece of clothes you want to wear. I had the car. For me, that's the car I wanted. Might not have been the car that was acceptable to you, but it was the car I wanted. So I bought it off the showroom floor because it was acceptable to people. Where you get that off the showroom floor? We say certain things to allow people to know where we think they want to see us at. We'll say certain things like, yeah, you know this ring costs $10,000. Who cares? If you go today or tomorrow, somebody else going to wear your ring. You could give me a soda top. If you love me for real, I don't need no special thing. So, as a result, I lost everything. The house, the car. I ain't really had no man. But I picked up one along the way when I got shot, because he was trying to talk to me then, and he became like he moved down North Carolina with me. So I felt in my spirit, because God hadn't gotten to me yet, that I was powerful like that. But as soon as he came, God said he ain't him. He removed him. And I felt some kind of way only for a second. But it was sociably acceptable for me to take who I thought belonged to you. So when I got down there, I had nothing. I was sleeping with a green comforter and a pillow in front of a fireplace. I didn't even have enough credit to get an apartment. So, but the house was big. It was huge. It was nice. But it was in my daughter's name. It wasn't mine. I had a house in D.C. that I couldn't really do nothing with. So I let the hustlers rent it out hoping that they would pay rent. They paid for a minute and then they stopped. So I got another bill. But it was sociably acceptable for me to have the ballers in my house. All having 1 foot in and 1 foot out. But it's sociably acceptable. Who renting your house? You know, they seeing them. They be like, whoa, them dudes doing good. They wearing the platinum chains. But when I asked them to leave after not paying rent for 6 months, they was like, we gonna leave when we want to. So that means I got to revert back again. I got to go get the boyfriend, because I know he got my back like a jacket, because he's stupid like that. So I sent him, now you go home. Now look, I call him, because we still got the ties that bind us are stronger than those that would tear us apart. We use the negative and the positive when it fits our status. So I get him and I say, I need you to go handle something for me. Now, I don't want you to hurt nobody. I just want you to get them out. Because they current me. And that's what the brother did. He said, now, don't tell me how to do what I do. Now, if them brothers got killed, even with time in this program, it would have been on my head. I would have to live with that, too. So, I'm going to tell you how the God of my understanding placed me in a place where I had nothing. I had to rely solely on him. I couldn't reach too many people. I ain't had nothing. I had to rely on a few people to feed me, because I ain't had no money to eat with. I had a hot plate out of Walmart. This wouldn't have been sociably acceptable to you. You couldn't see me living like that. So what I did was I did what I know how to do. I prayed. And I said, God, I know you ain't bring me this far to let me go now. Can you please show up for me? And if you show up for me, I would never live the way I used to live again. And I meant that with everything in me. I understood that being sociably acceptable to y'all didn't matter to him. He needed to, for me to hear him. And I know that this is a spiritual program, but my spirit goes straight to him, because when nobody else was there, he was all I had. But I'm going to tell you how he showed up. Because I had to relinquish my obsession with people and my compulsion to be accepted by people, my God showed up and showed out. The house that was empty, he filled it. The refrigerator that was empty, he filled it. People started sending me money from all over the place, and I continued to pray. Anywhere you want me to go, God, I'll go. Anything you want me to do, I'll do. But I need you. So what he did for me was, he said, well, just listen to me. I need you to stop listening to people for a minute. The program that he has set in front of us is the most spiritual thing I've ever encountered. Too bad it took me 20 years to read the book. Too bad it took me 20 years to ask for some help. Too bad it took people dying and ODing and me help killing them with my wanting to be accepted so much I went back to the street and sold dope, because they made me feel like I was somebody on the strip. Every time I came, I went with what I had because I knew they would accept it. And I only know that by the grace of God, I didn't use. Gotcha. So what I'm saying is, for the newcomer, recovery is a gift. It's been given to you. To be accepted by other people, to try to have relationships that are not for you. What happens to us with women, we go find the dude instead of letting the dude find us. Hello. And then you pray to get out of it. Yeah. Let me tell you how the God worked for me, and then I'm done. Not only do I have more than I've ever had, I'm debt free. I don't owe nobody nothing. My kids are happy. The only problem I have is today I try to act like I was younger than I am. Got on the back of a moped, fell and broke a bone in my wrist. I didn't come down here for that, but it happened. And my daughter was sad because she thought it was her fault. Now, I know I'm going to be in so much pain tomorrow morning because I'm in pain right now. But I want to let y'all know, right? When you trust the process, it will work for you. When you don't totally surrender, things will happen that are negative because that's how it's planned to happen. It took me a long time to trust the process. Please don't wait that long. Please don't wait that long. Because I was facing 30 to life with 15 years clean because I never addressed the anger. I disfigured and maimed somebody. You ain't got to act like that. So with that, thanks for letting me share.
Okay, let's thank our speakers again before closing with the serenity prayer.